and sixes. It's a strange and unusual music odyssey. Flying monkeys, scarecrows, jokers, and even midday tokers. Oh, this ain't your normal musical, man. It's a far-out psychedelic trip into the mind of the mad. This is going to be one wild and crazy musical event. Alice, Trip and Sixes, Thursday, March 31st at 10 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, from our hands to yours, celebrating 43 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
This is Stage and Studio. I'm Alan Montesilio. The music you're hearing is Mbire by Lubnis Wesa and the Vantis. Today on the show, we'll discuss a stunning play that premiered in Portland last week at the Artist Repertory Theater. It's called We Are Proud to Present, a presentation about the Herero of Namibia, formerly known as Southwest Africa, from the German Südwest Africa, between the years 1884 to 1915. Yes, it is a long title, but it has a lot to say. The show is about a little-known genocide committed by Germany in Namibia during the early 20th century. But it's also about what happens when Western performers of today try to tell that story. It's about power, race, racism, identity, and much, much more. The play was written by Jackie Sibley's Drury and has appeared in cities all across the country. And now it has arrived in Portland. I'll be chatting with the director of the show here in our fair city, along with two of the six actors who make it come alive. We've got a lot to talk about here on Stage and Studio. All of it is coming right up here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Stay with us. I'm Alan Montesilio, in for Dime Roberts. This is Stage and Studio on KBOO Community Radio. During the early 20th century, Germany committed a mass genocide against the Herero tribe in the area of Southwest Africa, now known as Namibia. It's an atrocity very few people in the West know about, especially here in the United States. But what happens after you do learn about it and try to tell that story? How do our own pressure points affect the way we try to tell the true story of white Europeans attempting to exterminate an African tribe? Join me to talk about all of that and more are Kevin Jones, Chantal DeGroat, and Chris Harder. Kevin Jones is the director of the Portland production of this play at the Artist Repertory Theater. Chantal DeGroat and Chris Harder are two of the actors in this performance. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you,
Alan. It's good to be here.
Before I begin, as much as I saw the show last week, I should say, and as much as I loved it, I don't know if I can read out the entire name of the show every time I refer to it during the program. Was there a shorthand that is acceptable for you all to use?
I think most people are saying we are proud.
We are proud?
Mm-hmm. We are proud.
We are proud.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Kevin, I'd like to start with you. As I mentioned, the show is not just about this particular historical event, but it's also about how that story gets told. Where and when does this show take place?
The show takes place in Portland, Oregon, and at the time that it is being viewed. It's about six actors who come together to tell the story by way of devised theater, using three white actors and three black actors, in hopes that by bringing individual interpretations, they can come to some sort of agreement about what this story is about. And what happens is it all takes place in a rehearsal room and a theater. And Chantal DeGroat's character, who is better known as Black Woman or Actor Six, decides that she wants to actually delve into the story by bringing together five other actors, and using some information that was gathered on the internet, and most of it was just letters from French letters. German letters, because they're so romantic, I guess.
Yeah.
German letters, soldiers, German soldiers, letters written by the German soldiers.
Yeah, actually, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the actors' roles. Actually, since you did mention it, I'd like to bring Chantal and Chris in this conversation. As you mentioned, the play features six actors, three white actors, three black actors, and the names of their characters are, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, white man, another white man, black man, black woman, and Sarah. I don't mean to be flippant about it, because the naming isn't intentional. Choice.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Actually, Chantal, could you tell me a bit about your character?
Sure. Black woman is a young woman who is moved to tell a story that she believes fills in the holes of her own lineage and legacy. And so she has brought some of her cohorts and friends and theater makers together. She needs them to tell a story that has virtually been untold here in the West, and one that she didn't know about until it landed in her lap one day via a magazine. And she is she struggles a lot to tell the story because she doesn't quite understand it herself. And much like myself, is searching for her family history and her place in the world and for home. And she needs these actors, these performers, black and white, to help her discover that and to create a meaningful piece of theater to make sure that this doesn't get forgotten, that these people existed and that their lives and lineages continue, perhaps even through herself.
Right, but imagine it's hard because there's three white actors and three black actors, and we're here in the sort of contemporary Western setting trying to bring this historical event to the fold. Kevin, how does the racial dynamic with three white actors and three black actors play out in this rehearsal setting?
Well, we all have, I think, a story as collectively, a racial story about racial oppression, subjugation, and even genocide. I think we are very encouraged in our culture to take a position, take a side, depending on what race you are. You're either the oppressor or you're the victim. And if you are the oppressor, then there's a certain kind of behavior and mindset that you are encouraged to ascribe to. And if you are the victim, then there's obviously the same on that end as well. And those stories, that narrative that we are sort of, we internalize, plays itself out in all of our relationships. And I think what Jackie, the playwright, did so beautifully is that she provided a platform for people, six people, to come together, who are coming together to do some art, to do a play. And even in the process of doing something as simple as that, they are faced with that racial conflict, the narrative. They're forced to have to, rather than just focusing on telling the story, now they have to focus on what side they're on and which is right and which is wrong. And the truth is, neither side is right or wrong because they weren't there.
Chris Harder, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. Based on jumping off of what Kevin was talking about, can you tell me a bit more about your character and some of the internal conflicts and struggles that he sort of confronts as he tries to be a part of telling this story?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Well, first of all, I'm really fortunate to be able to work with this group of artists, because this work has been, as Kevin describes, these characters are coming up against their own selves. And as I was going through the process, working on this show, my own personality, my own sense of entitlement was reflected right back at me. That's challenging for me as another white man, mm-hmm. to accept my own privilege and my own whiteness and my own, sense of entitlement. And this character, you know, I have a big heart. I care. I want to make a difference in the world, and I want to believe that I'm doing this work as my character believes. He's going into it with an open heart, some passion, drive to make a difference in the world, and still in that experience, still, wow, this is a difficult conversation to have. Confronted with that challenge of this is hard. And as the play moves on, there's some revelations that unfold for sure.
I have to say, when you were talking about that, there were moments in there where I was about to jump in and say, "Are you talking about you or the character you play?"
Well, that's a great question. Often, for me, it's like it's very easy for me to separate myself. Mm-hmm. Oh, this is my character, and I view this role as a character. But the parallels are really close to home here.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, that's part of your role as actor, just to inhabit a character. But I'd imagine with a show like this, it seems almost. I mean, granted, I'm not a professional, but it seems impossible not to do the show and have it reflect. Have you reflect on your roles as artists and as directors and as actors. Kevin, I'm going to start with you with this question. What questions or issues has doing this show brought up for you in your career as a director?
Well, so let me just say that you can't do this kind of a play unless you have really great actors. Mm-hmm. What they have to be able to do is to convey to the audience truth at every moment. Even though the play is completely scripted, a lot of people don't realize that it's completely scripted. Some people think there's improv going on, but to be able to embody those lines and those emotions requires a very skillful actor. And, you know, then for me, the challenge was, because it is a collaborative process, that's what we're trying to convey to the audience, that this is a devised piece of work. For me, it became clear that we had to actually bring that to the rehearsal room itself. And that requires a lot of trust. It's like you have to be working with professionals who are committed to the product, that are committed to good work, that it's not my job as a director to like say, okay, we have to make sure we have a good show. Every single actor and designer are committed to doing quality work and therefore committed to truth. And therefore, we had to be willing to scratch on the surface and sometimes deep within some of the scars and pains and hurts that we feel and experience culturally as human beings in this country. Yeah. So the racial wound is still there. It's not being healed. And here we are in a room for 4 weeks dealing with it 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. It was a challenge, but yeah. They were up for the task.
Yeah, the technical precision and also the sort of talking about racial wounds. I want to get to those in a moment. But Chantal, I'd like to ask you the same question I was asking Kevin. How did doing this show make you think and reflect on your own role as an actor, as an artist?
Well, God, that's a big question, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a really good question. You know, Kevin Jones has been instrumental in helping me understand that there are things about myself that I don't consider in my daily life, specifically my blackness. And so Kevin has cast me in, I think, two of three of the black roles I've ever played. in my life. So I really appreciate it because it helps me to remember, or actually, it finally starts to occur to me who I am and how I am seen in the world. And so playing this character has helped me to connect with the fact that, much like exactly what is written in this play, I don't know where I'm from. I don't know who my family is. I don't know where my people are. And I have missed them in a way that is hard to describe. I've missed them in a way that I didn't know that I missed them. And by working with Kevin, one of the things that has really changed my life is that he's helped me to have that very specific feeling of home and family that I never had before. My father is Black and my mother is white, and I did not grow up with my father or his family, and I didn't grow up with Black people. And so Kevin being really the first Black person that I've been close with, there is something to it. There is something there. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't really know how to describe it, but this deep feeling of family has, that's how I feel about Kevin. And I've never had that feeling before. And so Chris used the word revelation. I mean, I didn't really even know that that was something I missed or was seeking, but this particular role is seeking it in a very deep way. And I'm just very grateful to get to do it on stage and work it out, because I've done tons of Shakespeare. I've done plenty of modern stuff, classical work, always playing white characters. And I've never been able to work this stuff out before in my art.
Yeah. And on that topic.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Can I go die now?
Please don't.
Well, I understand that. On that topic, though, that actually Chantal and Chris have a scene prepared for us from the production.
Yeah,
sure.
And I'd like to just provide a brief lead in, since I did have the privilege of seeing the show. And please let me know if there's anything I'm missing. I believe what's happening here is that your character, Chantal, is looking at, right, so this is happening in a rehearsal room, and she's looking at an old picture of a Herrera woman from the early 20th century, mm-hmm. and she sees. It reminds her of her grandmother, and she sees her own family in that picture. And then Chris sort of improvises as a role of Chantal's character's grandmother, right? So this is all
Black
happening.
Grandmother.
Black grandmother, yes. Right. This is all taking place within a rehearsal scene where seemingly, you know, Chantal's character sees this picture and Chris's character snaps into improvisation, although obviously all this was very precisely rehearsed and coordinated. But I believe that's where we begin.
But the woman in this article, she looked like my grandmother. And suddenly I felt like I have a lineage. I felt like maybe I could point to a place, a specific country, a specific homeland, and I could say there. My family is from there. And I found that because my grandmother came to me and told me about a genocide where 8 out of every 10 people in this tribe, in my tribe, had been murdered.
It's terrible what those people do to each other.
My grandma wouldn't have said that.
You ain't never met me, girl.
She wouldn't say that.
You don't even know who I am.
I know it wasn't really my grandmother in that picture, but the woman in that picture could have been my grandma.
Have you gone crazy? You can't be somebody when you're already somebody.
But if things had been different...
Then you would be different.
I know, but just...
Just what?
Just taking a walk in someone else's shoes.
Ain't no putting on nobody else's shoes.
All right.
Walking around
that's
saying
enough.
This is this and that
I
is
said,
that.
That's
better
enough.
Shut your mouth and listen to me, girl. You can't take no walk in somebody else's shoes and know anything. You ain't bought those shoes. You ain't laced those shoes up. You ain't put those shoes on day after day. You ain't broken those shoes in. Now you can borrow somebody else's shoes, and you can walk as long as you want. They ain't your shoes. You can go ahead and steal somebody else's shoes, and guess what? They ain't your shoes.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Is it, one of the, you know, that this show has so many very emotionally powerful moments, and both parts sort of, you know, pulse pounding, and you know, your heart rate gets up, but it's also very, I can see it being very, it's very emotionally powerful, but I'm also wondering if it is, I guess, ever emotionally draining, and I'm wondering what that's like for you. Maybe I'll start with Chris this time, and then Chantal.
Well, this scene that we just explored just now is like, in some ways, that scene asks the question: Can I walk? Can a person take a walk in someone else's shoes? Really, right? Mm-hmm. And here I am stepping into an old black woman's shoes, right, to play her grandmother in this scene. And the truth is that I cannot really understand what it's like to be your grandmother, and what her experience would really be like. I can attempt to explore that point of view and try to live, take that walk and see what it might be like. But the truth is, I'll never be able to fully experience what someone else's experience is like. But it's a delight to try. It really is. I mean, I think part of that is why I love being an actor. It's like, I enjoy stepping into someone else's life or possibility, the circumstances that someone else might experience. So I love playing. There's a lot of playful moments. We collaborate together and we dance and we rap and we we sing and we move and we stomp and we clap and we overlap, and all of that has stirs up all kinds of different emotions, from joy to delight to anger to fear to hate, so emotionally draining. sometimes yes, sometimes it feels like I'm a vessel and all of that moves through and I feel free.
Yeah. Chantal, what was preparing for that scene like?
You mean like right now or
well,
in rehearsal?
I suppose.
The rehearsal room was I don't really know how to describe it. The rehearsal room had to become these scenes that we played out. I think everything that the audience comes and sees us struggle with on stage, we did struggle with together in the rehearsal room. You can't do this play and I guess you could do the play and not ask certain questions of each other. But it's been intense. Every performance is intense. Every performance, like Chris says, we laugh. We also cry. And sometimes we leave the stage and we just weep and hold each other. Because it's true, and it's not so much that the weeping is hurtful. A lot of people have said, God, I feel bad that you have to do this every night. And I do get that. And I hate that we have to reenact this stuff and that it exists. I hate that that's one of the tasks that we have, is to stir up the deepest pain possible. But the truth is, we live with it within us, and to have it move through us, like Chris says, it can be freeing, and it's validating, and it's very empowering to get to hold on to each other while we have that pain, as opposed to what it usually feels like, which is just walk around with it alone and don't show it and smile and be cool and make people comfortable. At least together, we know that even if there were times in the rehearsal room where we did argue and we were so frustrated, we stormed away or had to walk away or tried to shut someone down or cry or whatever, all that stuff, we get to have a deeper understanding of of these relationships and working it out, working through it. So we worked through it together every day, and we knew at the end of every day we'd be okay.
You mentioned that the many different ways that you work through that pain together and make these roles work, and that you ask certain questions of each other as directors, as performers, to make that work. I'm wondering what those questions are, because I'm not there in the room, obviously. What do you ask of each other to help make a performance like this happen? Maybe Kevin, I'll start with you this time.
Well, I can't think of any structured questions that we asked. For me, what I focused on was just getting the actors to bring up whatever it is that came up for them. And it was a lot of stuff. I mean, a lot of pain, encouraging the actors to talk about what's real for them. What do you feel in this moment? What does this make you want to do? What does this make you not want to do? That kind of stuff. But
yeah.
Encouraging them to just be open.
Yeah, Kevin really provided a safe space for us. And he, you know, part of it was an educating. He would talk about what race really is or isn't, and how the construct, the institutionalization of race plays out. He gave us language to have the conversation. So the number one thing is, as he was saying, is openness. And so I think what we all understand as this cast, and you know, with Kevin and even a lot of the designers, is we try to find just being honest with each other and speaking thoughtfully and knowing that it's going to be messy and confusing, but just to try. Mm-hmm. To try and be open and try and be honest and to listen. Mm-hmm. I think those are kind of our ground rules, and knowing that we could hurt each other or anger each other or even be afraid of each other, and just letting it be there. It's been a big part of it.
Yeah. I'm right there with you. I feel really grateful to be able to have conversations, difficult conversations. It's easy for me, and I know that it's easy for me to back away from difficult conversations in my life, and particularly conversations about race and racism. And I know that it's a privilege for me, actually, to be able to be silent. Mm-hmm. And so to take a step forward and find the courage within myself that my fellow comrades here have provided me this space to be able to talk and to, you know, I think that encouragement is really appreciated. And
we're glad you're here, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
One of the my last questions, because we're running short on time.
We love each other.
One of the things that I can tell. One of the things that I noticed too is you know, is it strange to have that conversation, perform a show like this in a city that is much more predominantly white than some of the other cities it's aired in, like New York or London or Washington D.C.
Is it strange to have the show here? Is
well,
that what
or I guess I'm wondering, what is that? Does that change the dynamic at all? Is it, what is that like, or is that not something that there's so much going on? Maybe there's not the space to have that part of it as well.
No, I think that's a great question, and I know we're almost out of time, so I'll be brief. I think the dynamic is that, you know, the audience is different, and so as a show as actors performing, what they walk away with is different, right? What my hope and vision is that there are people of all races that can come and see the show, and not the mainstream white middle-aged audience that comes to see the show that has a very particular, it's talking about narrative, that they have a very particular specific narrative about what the show is about. And I think they walk away feeling guilty, or they feel maybe even exonerated in some ways, as opposed to being encouraged to take action.
Yeah. Kevin, Chantal, and Chris, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Alan.
That's director Kevin Jones and actors Chantal DeGroat and Chris Harder. They're part of a breathtaking play called we are proud to present a presentation about the Herero of Namibia, formerly known as Southwest Africa, from the German Südwest Africa between the years 1884 to 1915. It is running at the Artist Repertory Theater in downtown Portland until April the 10th. For tickets, visit artistsrep.org. That's it for Stage and Studio this week. Thanks to engineer Janet Anderson. We'll have the show online at stageandstudio.org as well as on iTunes. Like us on facebook.com/stageandstudio or tweet at @StageAndStudio. D.May Roberts will be back in the host chair next week. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Alan Montecelio.
KABU Community Radio and Friends of Clark County are proud to co-sponsor an evening of fun and food Saturday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Vancouver, Washington. The evening will feature live music by Dan Weber, a dinner provided by Chef Sebastian Carosi, speakers talking about Clark County's smart growth plans, and local farmers on the current challenges and rewards of farming in Clark County. Again, that's an evening of fun and food, Saturday, March 19th at 6 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church, 4505 East 18th Street in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at KABU.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in this Friday at 11 a.m. as we remember the late, great Julie Bernard, who hosted KABU's Art Focus program for 23 years.
The people that I'm talking to, I'm approaching them the same way that I feel an ordinary listener would. I'm hoping that I'm asking the questions that an ordinary person might ask going into the gallery and looking at the work. I try to ask what that person might ask.
Remembering Julie Bernard, this Friday at 11 a.m.
Father of Cubism.
Andy Warhol looks at screens.